In a series of essays entitled Not For Nothing, Glimpses into a Jersey Girl's Youth. Is that the name? Into a Jersey Girlhood. There we go. There was a word missing in my script. I apologize. Author Kathy Curdo-Ri counts her Italian-American girlhood on the Jersey Shore in the 70s and 80s. Some constant pivotal realities are ever present in this coming-of-age memoir. The fallout from her parents' stormy marriage, the physical and emotional residue from dirty, undervalued work, and the effects of infidelity and addiction. These daily dramas, well, also cause the imagination to go curious. All kinds of things that are talked about in the book. It's as much about people as it is about place, language, and, of course, chaotic family love. Kathy Curdo teaches at Montclair State University and the Writing Institute at St. Lawrence College. Her new book is Not For Nothing, Glimpses into a Jersey Girlhood, and we welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, we had the governor as an opening act. Hopefully that was good enough for you.
It was. I was listening, and I actually heard him use the word locomotive. And I thought to myself, that's sort of what I feel like I'm on right now, because this is my first book, and it's all very new for me. So I'm learning, but I do feel like I'm sort of in motion.
So when it comes to the book, what is it? At what point in your life did you say, okay, this is something I want to / have to write?
So when I started the book, I didn't know I was starting it. And I'm around writers a lot. I teach and I'm in a writing group and I sort of surround myself with literary people. And that's not uncommon. I was in a writing workshop in 2005 and was given a writing prompt, something like write your earliest memory. And I just wrote this vignette that was very much based on sort of the senses and the memory. There was music. There was what I heard. There was what I saw. There was sort of what I felt. And I created this vignette that came out of me. And from there, it sort of it just catapulted me into a constant circling back to that voice and those scenes.
The voice is your voice, though, right?
It certainly is.
I mean, it is a memoir. It is, you mm-hmm. are talking. It is what you have felt, what you felt at that time. But we also get a reflection of how you've grown as well.
Right. So that was a big decision that evolved. I wrote very much, the first vignette was written very much from the child's voice. It's actually still the first chapter in the book. And what I did decide to do and went back and forth and changed tenses through the years and played around with different ways of approaching this material. And I always landed back to the child's voice or on the child's voice, but the voice grows as exposure to the world grows. And so I opened the book with one or two pages of a little note from the author, current day, and then 170 or so pages is just a movement of it's basically a girl growing up.
How much is it about place? How much, I mean, you talk about girls, Jersey girlhood. So how much is it about that place?
I would say it's a lot about the place. I mean, I left New Jersey when I went to college in 1986. And I've never lived there after that. I mean, I left and I've always lived in New York since that, you know, that period of time. But I've never stopped going home. It's easy because my home is only 2 hours from my hometown, which is actually where my whole family still is. It's in my bones. It's always been part of raising my children, going back to the beach. The water is a big part of the book. The ocean, being on the ocean, that was a big part of growing up for me. My mother loved the water, and she, I think, offered that to me. And so the Jersey Shore, the texture of New Jerseyans, the language, the way of life, at least that I felt it and experienced it as a young girl in the 70s and 80s, it's a big part of the book, I think. Yeah.
So tell us about, I mean, obviously a lot of it all begins at childhood, doesn't it? It always has to begin there. So what did your parents do? How were you a part of that? And that has a lot to do with how you are tethered as well.
Yes. So I was actually thinking a lot about the notion of beginnings recently. And so I think in light of that, I do just want to interject one thing before answering your question and to say I'm sort of beginning at the end. I had to come and think about how this book came to be and all the people that that helped me make it happen. And there are a lot. Obviously, my family first and foremost, and then all the people in my life who've given me great feedback. It's taken a long time. I've been working on this for a long time. With that said, my parents were very hardworking people, very loving people, but there was a lot of chaos in the early part of my childhood. There were separations. I sort of looked at their way of being with each other, and I think because there was a lot of loudness coming from an Italian-American family, which I actually love and am really proud of. But there was it was very hard to get a word in. And being the youngest of four, it was also hard sometimes to get a word in. And I had a lot of questions. So I think I just eavesdropped a lot and sort of watched and listened and became, I guess, interested or just sort of folded into life that way. And that I became more aware of that when I sat down to the blank page, how much the language came back to me.
You talked about the questions that you had. Are those normal questions that every kid has in growing up? Or, I mean, it seems in your case they may have been exacerbated by the circumstances that were going on in the house.
I mean, I suppose they were a little bit exacerbated, but no, I actually agree with what you said initially. I think they were. I think a lot of the questions that I asked as a child and actually continue to ask as an adult are sort of the typical questions that we ask ourselves then and now. You know, where do we belong? Who are we? I mean, hopefully some of those things become a little more clear and solidified as we grow up, but sometimes that changes and sometimes they don't, and sometimes we keep asking. But those were questions that I asked a lot as a young person, a lot, because there did come a point, and I think this happens in the middle of the book, when as a teenager I began to wonder, you know, really, where do I belong and do I want to stay here? That's the other part of this, I think, is the notion of leaving. And I developed a desire to leave as a probably in the middle of my teens, which was really hard because leaving doesn't go over so well in a big, big, tight, loving, chaotic, beautiful, sometimes, you know, frightening at times family. And especially, you know, when that is kind of not the usual impulse. So yes, I think but I think ultimately the questions, hopefully my readers will feel that they can connect to some of the questions I was asking, through those years.
In those questions, what is it like to revisit those and to think about it in a more diagnostic fashion?
So when you ask me that question, I think of two things. The first thing I think of is my experience and work as a social worker. So I've taught sociology. I practiced as a social worker for a period of time. You know, I could have at some point sat down and even did a little bit playing around on the page, like, you know, to go to this material and be more sort of psychological or analytical about it and diagnostic, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
And that just never felt right or comfortable or organic for me. It felt much more comfortable to go to the material and have it be scene driven. I love to write dialogue. I love to go back to the texture of the time, to the music, to the food, to the way people talked and loved each other and hurt each other. That is something I felt much more comfortable with as an artist and as a writer. The second part of the answer is that, you know, becoming a parent myself also contributed to a little bit to my desire to have this be written the way it was. Watching my children grow up, and I think when my children became the ages that I remembered being or remember being, that like there was a channel that changed with that, and I felt creatively that I could go to the page in a way that was I don't know, just a little different at the time, you know, at the time.
I read in the introduction that you write about the effects of infidelity and addiction. How were you affected by that?
I'm still affected by it.
Yeah.
But I don't say that at all, meaning, you know, pity me for being affected by it. I mean, it's just something that was a part of my childhood that I have learned from. I've learned a lot about the bravery of people who deal with addiction, both as addicts and as family members of addicts. I've also learned a lot about forgiveness and about acceptance. I think that it definitely affected the person I am in all different ways. In all different ways.
Is I know the answer to this, but I'm asking because I mean, it's different for everybody. But forgiveness is hard, right? I mean that takes us a long time to figure out.
Forgiveness is really hard.
And and quite frankly, whether ultimately it's worth it.
Yeah, that's actually. Forgiveness is hard, and I can't say. I think the only person who can decide or know if it's worth it is the person who's working on the forgiving.
Right.
I think that does take a long time. I recently was just such a fundamental thing that came like crashing into my head the other day on my way to work. I teach, and I was thinking, well, what am I going to say to my students today that will maybe, you know, break open something really, you know, amazing for them? And I just thought about the idea of, I just thought, don't forget to remember. Right? Just don't forget to remember. And I brought it up, and one of my students who was, you know, great, she was like, yeah, but sometimes we have to forget, right? And it's hard to forget. And then we got into this whole thing about forgiving and forgetting and that kind of thing. And so, yes, I think forgiving is hard. I know it's something I work on. I think it's very much kind of attached or, you know, I think forgiveness and acceptance are sort of collaborators sometimes. And I just think, you know, I don't know. I work on those things all the time. I mean, I think that growing up, you know, the sister of an addict, and watching my brother go through sobriety and relapse in sobriety really did teach me about that and about acceptance and hope, actually, too. I think that's another part of it as well.
Sure. Hope.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel better when you finish a project like this?
So I think that the word finish is curious.
Yeah.
I really do. I mean,
that's why these are glimpses.
Yeah, they are very much glimpses, and they are also they end, you know, it's a very specific period of time in my life. It's my understanding of that period of time. I've said to many people, this is not the whole story, it's a little piece of the story. So finished is a curious term. It's nice to feel like it's cooked for now. But I do believe that, I mean, I'm a firm believer in the fact that there's really nothing, I mean, a final draft doesn't truly exist. I do believe that. So.
It's cooked.
It's cooked.
Now you have to serve it and go make more.
I'll try. I mean, I've been told I do sort of do that in an okay fashion, given the given my upbringing. We had a lot of good food in our house and good eating and a mother who fed us very well in all different ways. So I will try.
Kathy Curto's new book is Not For Nothing, Glimpses into a Jersey Girlhood. Kathy, thank you very much for being with
us.
It's a great
pleasure
to have you on the program.
Really an honor to be here. Thanks so much.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.